Welcome and good morning to all of you. It is a good thing to be able to come together this morning, and we're very grateful to have the chance to do that and to study together, offer worship to our God together as well. Thank you all for being here. Hope that our time together will be of good use to each of you. One of the things that you get to enjoy during bedtime as you're putting children down is saying those evening prayers with kids. We are not to the point with Bonnie yet where she's able to say any prayers. We're happy if she isn't, you know, crawling all over and still trying to do something to stay awake a little bit longer when we reach that point at bedtime. If she puts her hands together and kind of does the gesture, then that's a great victory for us. So we're not hearing anything from her. But when you reach that point, you've all heard children's prayers, especially during that thank you portion of the prayer, can sometimes just be drawn out almost to the point of comedy. They can be exhaustive in cataloging everything. You know, start with the stuff that I hear a lot, maybe from mom and dad. Thank you for Jesus, and thank you for our food and our home, and thank you for mommy and daddy and the dog and Star Wars and G.I. Joe, and then maybe they just kind of start looking around the room, and they're just sort of naming, you know, thank you for the bed and for the lamp and all that, and then you realize, okay, maybe we need to start wrapping this up a little bit. But, you know, we laugh at this, and we chalk it up maybe to kids who are just learning to pray correctly, you know, without the decorum and the respectability that we pick up later on in life, where you cut out some of those nonsense things. Really, it's probably us who need to learn more from them in that overwhelming, excessive, we might dare to say, thank you that we might issue to God in our prayers. Consider just a few things. I'm going to show you some things to consider in a moment. But Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 18 beginning, going all the way down into verse 20, but the Apostle Paul tells us there, be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. You notice an interesting phrase there, giving thanks always for all things. Those are big words to add. Those are big adverb phrases to add there when he's talking about our prayers. Always, for all things. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6. In everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 18, the apostle says to rejoice always and pray without ceasing. Again, there are two big phrases you find there. In everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. In everything, give thanks. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 7, really actually, I'll just put these few verses found in the book of Colossians up there, and we continue to just see that same emphasis in how our prayers of thanksgiving are supposed to go up before God. You've been taught to be abounding with thanksgiving in chapter 2 and verse 7. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Whatever you do is to be with that thanksgiving under the authority of Christ in chapter 3 and verse 17. Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving, chapter 4 and verse 2. Now, these are difficult commands at times, especially at certain times. Think to the most trying moments in your life, the most difficult seasons, and we don't have to drum up a list of examples. You would have many from your own life. Maybe you're going through one of them right now. But a season of intense hardship, difficulty, pain, anxiety, uncertainty, whatever it might be, when those times have been most difficult, to then look at a passage that says, in everything, give thanks. Give thanks to God always, in all things. Isn't that a hard command to follow? is it possible to give thanks for everything that happens to us? To that I would say probably it isn't possible to have that attitude, or maybe even to be thankful for every event that happens to us. I don't think that is what God is telling us to do. That everything that might befall you is something that deserves gratitude, I suppose. That would be another topic for another day. I think, though, speaking from the positive, what God is telling us to do, what the Spirit is commanding through these passages, God is encouraging us, one, to have a mindset that naturally tends toward gratitude. That is the default position. That is what we think of when anything does happen to us is, what is the good in this? And thank God that that good has come. We just naturally incline ourselves in that direction. And secondly, to be able to see that hope that runs through each situation. I want to consider together with the rest of our time this morning our need for gratitude. I have up there Thanksgiving in July. I know I am bad with the timing of holiday type thing. I didn't talk about Independence last week. I didn't talk about Mother's back in May. I never time my Arbor Day lesson is always just totally scattershot when that's going to fall. But this seemed too important to wait until November. Let's not put this off a few months to line up with our common holiday. Let's have Thanksgiving in July and consider why it is and what there is to be gained from devoting ourselves, putting our hands to the work of following those commandments from God, to be thankful in all things, to give thanks in everything, whatever you do in word or deed, to have that with gratitude to God. Well, let's consider, first of all, why that is necessary. Why would God give those commands? I mentioned just in the little talk on Wednesday night, those commands from God according to Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 6, he's speaking specifically of the law, but I think this holds true for everything that God has given to us to keep. It is for our good always. That's what Moses said of the law. The commandments that he has given us this day are for our good always if we follow them. Now, oftentimes it will be the case we're looking much more long-term when we are to follow those commands. When Jesus says, bless those who curse you, pray for those who persecute you, and to suffer through those things. Okay, that's not going to be good for me right here in the long term. But the point I'm making from all of that is, God doesn't give commands arbitrarily and just say some things that maybe don't make any kind of sense or don't have any good in and of themselves and just to see if we'll do them, just to see what would happen if I told people to do this. There's a point to it. Our gratitude is necessary. There's a point, a theme, an underlying reason why that should happen. And the first of those would be that a correct relationship with God demands gratitude. That relationship can't exist as it needs to without our understanding of how thankful we need to be to Him. Ingratitude is something that is abhorrent. In any field in which we encounter that stark ingratitude, it's just not appealing to us in any way that we find it. In Romans chapter 1, when Paul is cataloging the mass sin of especially the pagan world, the Gentile world, and is sort of following their fall, following the depths that they had gone away from God. That is one of the key ideas that he mentions. They didn't honor God, nor were they thankful, he mentions. And seems that seems to be something that causes Paul a bit of outrage. He takes umbrage at that. They didn't know him, nor were they thankful. How could you not be, is the implied question in mentioning that. And Israel, time and again throughout its history, when God sends a prophet to them, or when he speaks of their history in one of the Psalms, when he is looking at the relationship of those two parties, God and Israel in covenant, this is what he has to chastise them for regularly, that they didn't give thanks to him for all that he had done. He had taken care of them in so many ways, had brought them up out of so many pits of misery, and they never gave thanks. They never had a time that they seemed to be able to set aside to remember him and to honor him for what he had done and to give thanks. Even Satan himself seems to realize that gratitude or loyalty would be a natural reaction to God's blessings. Look in the first chapter of Job, and when you see that interaction that Satan has with God, where they're discussing Job, this upright man, this man who doesn't do anything wrong, he doesn't ever do anything that God is displeased with, he just seems to be blameless, and Satan really makes the point, of course he's going to be a good, loyal servant of yours. You've built a hedge around him. You're coddling him. You take care of him all the time. You bless him with all sorts of things. His life is wonderful. Why would he do anything else other than be a good boy? Of course he's going to be the kind of man you want to see on the earth because of how well you're taking care of him. Remove all that stuff and then he'll curse you for sure. But Satan understands that relationship. And that demonstrates the real essence of Satan, who is not always that over-the-top evil, but he is the ultimate pragmatist. And here he's right from a basic human standpoint. It makes sense to act in a certain way when you've received great generosity from someone. You are kind to those people who have been kind to you. It is appropriate and right when someone has given you an incredible gift or blessing to treat them in a certain way as a result of that. How can we possibly have an appropriate view of God if we do not live with constant gratitude towards Him for the salvation that He offers? If we are really understanding of that relationship, where it stands, our footing relative to each other, our standing relative to God, where we are before Him, we are dependent upon Him for everything, physical, spiritual, anything in between, ceases to be if not for God. How could we live rightly before Him if we fail to acknowledge that, if we fail every day to give thanks for what He provides, physical, spiritual, and all shades in between? It simply can't happen. We can't have anything approaching a correct relationship with God without that gratitude. If you look in Philippians chapter 4, Philippians chapter 4 has, I guess, some well-known instruction on this matter, but in Philippians 4, beginning in verse 6, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. We read that verse a moment ago. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. You see then down in verse 11, not that I speak in regard to need, for I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. When we talk about these, you know, some of these spiritual qualities or some of these states of mind that a Christian needs to have, like contentment or faith, reliance on God, a lack of worry, that's really what Paul is talking about beginning in verse 10. That's not just close in proximity on the page when you make that jump from verses 6 and 7 down to verse 11, where he's just talked about, you know, in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, go to God and you'll receive that peace from Him. That's how you reach that point in verse 11, that I've learned in whatever state I am to be content, because I realize who it all has come from. And I realize that I'm dependent on Him for everything, and that He will see to my needs, or that He won't. And as Daniel's three friends would say, even if He does not see to my physical well-being right now, I'm still going to worship Him, I'm still going to follow Him with faith, and know that that will ultimately be rewarded. That's the progression of thought here. You don't get where you need to be with God unless you see what he has done and are thankful for it. Well, in line with that, though, our relationship with others demands gratitude. My relationship to you demands gratitude, both to God and to you, to other people. That interpersonal gratitude. We see, again, those qualities that a Christian should embody. What I need to do and what I need to be. To be generous. To be loving. To be forgiving. Those are difficult, if not impossible, to show to others without first learning gratitude towards God. You think of the parable Jesus tells in Matthew 18. We won't spend a lot of time on this parable. There are numerous lessons, I think, to be found in Matthew 18, beginning in verse 21. We call it the parable of the unforgiving servant. In short, the story concerns these two men. One man owes a huge debt to his master and would be unable to pay that in 1,000 lifetimes. And yet his master says, I'm going to clear the books. I'm not going to hold you accountable for it. And that man goes from his master's office, kind of, so to speak, and immediately goes out and finds his friend who owed him a couple $100 and shakes him down for it, grabs him by the throat, roughs him up, tries to turn him over to the authorities, turn him over to the torturers who would painfully extract every last penny that this man has. Of course, the master's opinion of him, you wicked servant, that's wickedness. But we consider in that parable, the true point Jesus is making, the overall point, is that God will not forgive if we do not forgive. But the other conclusion we can draw from that, if that first man had truly been grateful for forgiveness, if he had truly understood what had happened for him and what the master had forgiven him and truly could appreciate that and had that gratitude, he wouldn't have gone anywhere near that other man. Wouldn't it be much more likely we'd see, you know, you read stories sometimes about people paying it forward. Maybe a chain reaction starts in a fast food restaurant in the line. A guy pays for the person behind him, and the other guy gets up to the window, and they say, the guy in front of you paid for your meal. You don't know anything. And he says, well, great, okay. I'll just pay for the guy behind me. I mean, I didn't do anything good to deserve a free meal. I think I'll just go ahead and get the guy behind me, and maybe that lasts for 20 cars until the cheapskate shows up, right? But wouldn't that be much more the attitude that someone would have if he really recognizes God has forgiven me a debt that I could never pay off. I could never do anything on my own to make that right. I think I will treat my brother with a little more understanding. I think I can treat someone who has sinned against me with some grace and some mercy and some forgiveness. Cultivating that overall disposition of gratitude will also help us to recognize that we depend on people for much. It's a very fragile thing, the happiness that we exist in, if we have it. It's very easy for a person to ruin someone's day. It's very easy for a stressful encounter to just kind of color the way everything goes. And by the same token, it's very easy for a small kindness to have a big impact. Think of how many times someone has just really made your day by doing something small and something insignificant. Think also of the many big things, the big gestures that we have been the beneficiaries of in our lives on someone else's account, something someone has done for us. If we can recognize the debts that we owe to God and to others, we will naturally act with greater kindness and greater grace. And if we do that, are we not naturally going to strengthen every relationship that we have? Are those not going to grow richer and deeper and more loving and more beneficial to both parties? if we have those attitudes towards each other and certainly towards our God. Well, what is it that we do have to be thankful for? We haven't really cataloged much, maybe spoken in generalities. Let me just mention a few. Philippians chapter 1, beginning in verse number 3, is one that I think of often. The blessing of each other. Philippians chapter 1, beginning in the 3rd verse. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making request for you all with joy, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. So it's Paul writing to a church that he loved, many people that he had very high opinion of, high esteem for, had warm feelings towards them. And when he thought of them, anytime he did, he was thankful. He was thankful to God for who they were, for what they had done for him, what they continued to supply for him. Don't you have those people? I know you'd probably say, yeah, a lot of them are here today. A lot of them are in this room. But I started thinking, Beth's sister's in town she lives in the Houston area. We were just talking the other day about kind of common acquaintances that we all still have with her in Houston. And just started thinking about some of those people I haven't seen now in a year, in over a year by now. And some people that I don't know that I'll ever see again. I'm sure a lot of those people I never will see again. I didn't see them that often maybe when I lived in Houston. It'd be someone who visited from another church every once in a while, and I'd see them when a gospel meeting rolled around or when they came in town to visit their children who worshiped with us. But it would be a person that always put a smile on my face when I saw them, and I knew that we had the same faith and served the same God. And no matter where we are and continue to be, we're still doing that same thing. Aren't you thankful to have that great extended family, that when you chance to think about them, you can just say, thank God they're doing His work wherever they are. And thank God that I will see them again someday. Even if it isn't here, I'll see them in the place of greatest fellowship, perfect fellowship. That's something to be grateful for. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 28, the writer says, the English Standard Version reads there, "Let us therefore be grateful for receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken." The kingdom that God has welcomed us into, our salvation, our participation in the eternal rule and reign of God. I'm grateful for that. I am thankful, especially the more and more we consider how tenuous peace seems to be here on earth. And when you think about a kingdom, a mighty nation, a rule of some kind, and of course there's always hand-wringing in our country. Are we as powerful as we used to be? Are we going to continue to be, you know, the leader of the free world, things like that? And I don't know how long that will last, if it even still is. I won't be totally flippant and say I don't care, but the point I'm making in saying this is I don't have to care about that, because the kingdom that I'm truly a member of, the kingdom that I am actually part of, cannot be shaken, the Hebrews writer says. And that's where I belong. That's where my ultimate allegiance is. No matter what happens in this country or any other in the world, no matter if war were to break out everywhere tomorrow, no matter if we were to be subjugated by some foreign adversary overnight and we didn't ever see it coming, and we had a totally new reality to wake up into tomorrow, those would be awful things, but they would not change our standing before God. And nothing will change our standing before God save our own foolishness, our own rebellion against Him. There's not anything, Jesus says, that would snatch us out of His hand. That kingdom cannot be shaken. Give thanks to God for that. We have that reality, that bedrock, steadfast truth to rest upon. Well, you realize I'm reaching the end of this lesson, and you say, we only mentioned two things. This is going to take forever. I'm going to cut off there, and maybe just with a bit of an invitation to do as we sing often. Maybe we don't sing the song often here, but count your many blessings. Count them one by one. I've been singing that song for as long as I can remember. That's awfully good advice. That's a useful exercise at times. To really, and I've never really sat down and done this, but maybe to literally try and do that. I like lists. I like charts and spreadsheets and things like that. I like having things organized. Open up an Excel sheet. I don't know. Open up a document that'll be able to let you keep track of the numbers. Try to count the things that you have to be grateful to God for. My children, my wife, my family, the freedom that I have, the clothing I can wear, the home that I live in, the car that I can get around town in. I mean, you would start with those mundane, everyday kind of things that you might take for granted and expand out into things that maybe you don't think of as often. How high would that toll rise? How high would that number get before you really exhausted things? I don't know what the cap would be. I don't think there is one. Count your blessings. Try to do that. In Ephesians chapter 1, beginning in verse 3, Paul is almost doing that. I mean, he is kind of taking that inventory. We give thanks to God who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in Christ Jesus. All of them. Any good thing that we have, anything worthy of considering good, you have God to thank for it. And he has seen to the need. Some of those things that we've mentioned already are truly exceptional and daunting, you know, in pointing out how much we've been blessed with. But there's great value in trying to count them and trying to number what it is that the Lord has given to us. James chapter 1 and verse 17 talks about the good and perfect gifts that the Father has given to us. Be grateful. Be thankful for what we have, for what we know we will have, for what we've received in the past. Our God is matchless in his love for us. He is matchless in his provision for us. May we be people who recognize that, are not haughty about that, are not entitled, feel entitled to what he has given, but people who give thanks always in all things. My encouragement for each of us, especially myself, this morning. Thank you very much for your time. We're going to take a break now for a few minutes and then reconvene in our classes. I know some of you will be going to children's classes, I know, but we'll be getting back together in just a moment. We'll be in Acts chapter 28 in our class in here. Thanks for your time.